Hi, my name is Shani, and welcome to the Experience Designers podcast, where we explore the human experience, what it is, and how we might create better ones for ourselves and for others. In this episode, we talk to Mia Ekman and Malin Erzhage, a social anthropologist with a background in training and leadership development and a consultant with a background in organizational development who came together around their belief in self-leadership. We talk about what self-leadership is and what it requires from us as individuals and as leaders or as coworkers in an organization. And we philosophize around the efficient and productive workplace and what it might mean to show up as our full selves in that context. Malin and Mia, welcome. I'm really excited to get to have this conversation with you. Just to fly in, because we talk about kind of big topics usually, but just to ground into a little bit who you are, I know you both work with self-leadership as a tool for self-development, for team development, for leadership. And I'm, of course, curious what brought each of you to that topic. And as your partners in business, kind of what brought the two of you together?
I think that everyone talks about self-leadership, right? It's such a well-known word, and still it might not mean that much to a lot of people. So maybe the question is, what do we put into the word, and why do we make that distinction, that definition? When we today think about what self-leadership is and when we define it, we say that self-leadership is working, acting with awareness, and acting from your values and your strengths and what is meaningful to you. And I think we landed into that definition because when the whole COVID pandemic started talking about self-leadership, it was the big thing. And everyone started talking about it from the perspective of how will we as organizations succeed? How can we make sure people will do what they're told or what they're supposed to be doing while working from home and not being followed up? And how can we make sure people are effective? And how can we create results when we don't see each other every day? And at that point, Malin and myself, we had been working with the idea of self-leadership for quite some time and quite some years in organizations. We didn't really recognize that definition. We didn't really feel comfortable in that definition. For a lot of reasons, we realized that, yes, personal efficiency or being effective, being productive, being accountable, all those things could really be the effect of self-leadership, but that's not where we start. But instead, we want to start in how do you come in with your full self so that you can decide on when you want to use those tools that are available to you to be accountable, to be effective or efficient, and to contribute in the settings that you're in.
So efficiency and productivity is more kind of an outcome really than it is an end goal in itself.
I think the way we see self-leadership is that it is becoming aware of yourself, becoming aware of your context so that you can choose how you want to act in that context. So rather than reacting on the things happening around you, you choose how you want to act and you ground that in yourself with an understanding of your context, which is meaning that effectiveness can be something that you work towards and something that you want, but that's because that's something that you're grounded in. That's self-leadership.
Hmm. I really like that awareness. It's been a theme, I think, that's come up in a lot of conversations for me over the years, how a lot of things start with awareness, whether it is in ourselves or about, as you're saying, about our contexts. How do you promote that in people?
It's really, awareness is central in everything we do. And I think that how do we promote awareness in people? It starts by giving them time, I think, because just as Mia described, my experience is that when we meet people and when they come to us asking for something, they want tools to be more effective. They want tools to become a better team or to you better results. And after we've had them for a while, what they appreciate and what they take with them is that they've had time for reflection. And that's really it. They've had time to talk to each other about things that matters, to reflect over themselves. And that time and that reflection is what I think creates that awareness. But we don't have that time today, or we don't take that time. Maybe.
Yeah.
What do you say, Mia?
I think it's very much that. And just as you say, allowing the time for reflection is maybe the biggest thing that we provide when we work with teams or organizations or individuals. We actually talked about it yesterday that when we come out into teams or when we work with teams, they almost always tell us about a day-to-day situation where they are constantly productive. They're constantly creating and producing and giving something. They are giving an end result all the time. Each meeting is for them to produce or create some sort of value. And I have so far never met anyone who does not want to do their best. And that can be kind of heartbreaking when you see the situations that people are in the organizations today, because they are kind of stuck between rock and a hard place many times. So when we come in and provide that time for reflection, they kind of realize that, okay, this is actually what is producing the results. And they knew that all along, they just forgot about it. So that is really one big thing. The other thing, I think, that we talk about when we talk about creating awareness is, yes, you do need the reflection. You need time for reflection. But you also need to get a chance to look at yourself together with other people. You need to have a chance to first autonomously look at, okay, what is it that I bring into the table? What are the experiences and the skills and the capacities that I have? And you need to get a chance to reflect on that. But then you need to, in dialogue with someone, get to talk about that. And when you do that in a structured process or on specific questions that actually matters for the people that you work with, then something happens, because it's when you get to mirror yourself to others and when others also get to just hold that space for you, that is when awareness can happen.
I can relate to that. And when you go into developing your own sense of self-awareness, you need mirrors. And sometimes they are other people, and sometimes they are situations, and sometimes they are triggers. But it is a big part of it to hold up that mirror to yourself and dare to look. Sometimes it's also really scary what you find when you look in there. Ooh, yeah. Okay.
And that kind of awareness, it is, I mean, Malin and I, we have chosen to work within the organizational context. You know, we work with organizations and within the industries where people spend so much of their time and where people give so much of themselves. And I mean, we could have chosen maybe to work with, you know, developing family systems or relationships or something like that. But when you're at work, you make a choice to be part of something, to create something together. And a lot of interesting things happen there. And there are a lot of awareness that if you can come in with your full self and be allowed to do that, and at the same time being asked for your contribution, then I think that that is kind of where the what makes me tick.
Amazing. So let's roll back on that a little, because the big question I always try to grasp here and where I start is just understanding. So what would it look like if we did things in a more human way, or in a way that is more adapted to actual people, not production units, not somebody who needs to have a certain output or an even output. And so I'm really curious from both of your points of view, because then you work with self-leadership and you talked a little bit about this corporate world that in many ways is looking for efficiency and productivity. And what, for you, what does it look like when it's more human?
That's a really good question. What does it look like when it's more human? I think that I'm going to relate back. My first job after university was in the US, and I was part of a small team there. And I was young. I was not a native English speaker. I was working as a consultant towards the pharmaceutical industry, which I knew absolutely nothing about. My main goal with that job was to live in New York. So it was tough. But my experience there was that I was welcomed into that context with my whole self, much based on the leader that I had and the team that was around me. I could be fully myself. It was okay that I didn't know anything. It was okay that I didn't really know what I was doing there. There was a clear frame for what we were going to achieve together. I knew what was expected of me, but I also knew that I wasn't expected to succeed at once. And we could talk about that in a very open way within the team. I was never afraid to hide anything, and neither was my colleagues. We were aware of our different family situations. We were aware of our different flaws and strengths, and everything was out in the open there. And for the time that I was working there, I developed tremendously, did great things, and I had so much fun. And I could truly be myself with everything. And sometimes people say to me, it was almost, I had that experience as my first experience. So going into other organizations after that was tough, because I didn't really get that I had to, actually be professional, or I couldn't say certain things, or I couldn't do certain things. I had to make myself look good and my performance look good. Because that was, to me, in that team and in that organization that I started, that was very human. We could be everything that we were, and we could talk about it. That wasn't saying that we were just a family. We're held accountable if we didn't deliver. We talked about it to make that better. But it wasn't, it wasn't a personal failure. It was like, how can we make it? So maybe that's really how I, and we said it before, the human way of doing it is that we welcome each other as humans. Not saying that that's taking away that we are there for a reason. We're choosing to be there to create results. We have something, we have a mission. But it is just having that space where we are open to that we are whole human beings.
I love that. And that we deliver those results through being human.
Yes.
Not through removing our humanness and leaving it somewhere at the door.
No. Exactly that.
Yeah.
What a great first experience to have.
I know.
Set the bar really high, though.
I talk to my boss from there sometimes still, and I'm like, you're the best boss I've ever had. And probably ever will have. It was a great experience.
And it's good to see that it's possible. That as well, I think. At least that's something that resonates in me listening to you, is that there are lots of good examples, but there are also lots of bad examples, and many people will go through their whole career or big parts of it never having experienced that kind of thing. I was the leader of a team last year, and I was quite an inexperienced leader, but I set for myself just two things. I thought, okay, I'm doing this on an interim basis. If I'm going to be two things, it is human and transparent as much as I possibly can. And those things, just lead with those. The rest be damned, as long as I am those two things. And I had people in my team in their late 40s and early 50s who said to me that I was the best manager they'd ever had. And it's, of course, a really nice compliment. And on the other hand, I felt really sad. You had to come this far into your career to feel like somebody saw you.
Yeah.
and treated you like a person and appreciated you as a person. So yeah, I hear what you're saying. Mia, what are your thoughts?
I don't think I've ever had that experience as Malin had, maybe now. But I constantly reflect on the fact that you could say that I grew up professionally in international performance management organizations. So we did learnings and trainings for sales leadership and service and focusing on behaviors. And we were great at it. But one of the things that always came back to me as something that I can't really solve this, it was the fact that I worked with organizations who spent loads of money and energy to recruit the best salespeople, for example, because they wanted those specific great people, and they were treated as superhumans, and as superhuman things were expected of them. And at the same time, they were welcomed into organizations that said, this is how you should be here. This is how we do things here. And that was a big clash for me. I didn't get that, because you do recruit people because you want them as individuals with their specific set, the skill sets and everything and personalities, to be part of developing the whole. That was what I thought it was about, but it wasn't for most organizations. We want the best, and then we want to mold them into this specific frame. And I think that maybe that is a good human experience for me in an organizational context, that you allow everyone to be part of creating the whole. Because in that, to me, is a lot of accountability. It's you're welcome in with your full self. That also means that you will be and take responsibility for what is it that you want to bring to the table? What is it that you want to develop and share and contribute with? And when you do that, we as a whole will be even better to create what we're supposed to be doing together and succeed in that with the flavor of each and every one of us here. And that will make it better. That's a diversity thing. That's how we actually become better together, I think. Mm-hmm.
So more in the value add thinking. And I can relate to the whole molding. Similar to you, I've worked with culture in most of my career. And for a large part of it, it was about values alignment.
Yeah.
And as you're saying, like molding people, even if you took them for the capacity that they had and the values that they did have, to have something that matched.
Yeah.
And I know, similar to you, the two of you, I also work with a business partner. We are, of course, a small business of two people. But we also work to create spaces of exploration where there needs to be a frame for how we show up in that space. And we talked through it a lot. We had a long process of sharing our values with each other and how we wanted to do things. And we landed in the fact that, no, we wouldn't want to have company values. We want to have principles for how we show up in our common space.
Yeah.
And the first principle is come as you are, because we wouldn't want anybody to change their values.
Yeah.
We would want them to come in and add their flavor to whatever is going on.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty. I mean, it's just a structural, it's a linguistic way of expressing saying like, okay, we're not going for the values, we're going for the principles. And whoever steps into our space, these are the principles that we work with. And if you feel okay with that, welcome in. Mm-hmm. If you don't, then that's also fine. But maybe this is not a match then. Mm-hmm. So just setting that identity. So I see what you mean. And I guess I'm also a little curious from your point of view, because you work with a lot of groups and organizations, and it's always nice to hear and talk about this, like show up as your full self. Yes. And then how do we do it? What does it look like in a more practical sense?
That's a very good question. And basically that's what we're trying to achieve. with everything that we do. But maybe how we came about to become partners is one way of describing that. So how do you show up as yourself? How do you create teams that allow you to do that?
Yeah, because what kind of support do those teams need? Yeah. Like, what is it? Yeah, what surrounds it that makes it possible?
Yeah, because what we're not talking about is people being allowed to act crazy. There's still there is an interesting and intriguing tension between, you know, come as you are, develop and contribute with what you think is important, but within the frame that we set together, as you talked about, you and your partner's principle, like this is what we believe in, this is the framework that we create together. And within this framework, you're allowed to, and we ask you to come in with your full self and flavor. The first thing, what was the first principle that you said, Shani?
Come
as you are.
Yeah.
When Malin and myself met, I joined an organization where you had been for a while. Yeah. So we actually worked together for quite some years in another organization before we decided to become partners and do this journey together. And I was super excited to join this team because it was a brilliant setting. It was a brilliant team and it was a beautiful company and we did so many great things. So I was super excited when I came there. And there was one thing that I couldn't get my head around. And I was like, wow, I don't get it. And Malin, I took Malin to coffee and I kind of hesitantly asked, like, okay, so Malin, this thing with this symbiotic thing, what is it that I'm supposed to be doing there? What's the expectation here? And I just remember you looking into your coffee and you're like, just drop it. Just forget about that. You don't need to do anything of that if you don't want to. And that was a kind of openness and transparency that I was not at all familiar with, expecting, not necessarily fully comfortable with, because I still thought that it was a big thing to have this professional outlook on how we're doing things together. So where I'm getting at with this story is that kind of openness is the first step, I think. Because what Malin said was, this is not important to me. I don't care about that. I will do great things anyway, but this is not what I will put my energy into. You decide for yourself. This is my thing.
It is probably a good way of describing sort of the openness and transparency, because I, at that time, was open to Mia because I felt that it was allowed. I felt in that timing that it was. And I think that is like part of it is being open and transparent, but it's also how that is received. Because I'm probably, if you would talk to people who have worked with me in different organizations, I am quite open and honest and possibly opinionated about how I think that things are and should be and work. But it's very different how that is received. And I think that's, you know, we talked about leadership before and how I think that leadership is so important to create that environment. Like the leaders will be part of how we welcome people into the team. Do you meet people with, again, what are your expectations? Do you meet them with curiosity? What is your own way of being open and being vulnerable? That will set the tone because you as a leader will be important. So it goes both ways. We can ask people to come in as they are, but it's also how do we take care of that when they do, when it's comfortable and when it's not comfortable? How do we take care of opinions that we don't agree with? How do we take care of somebody acting a little bit crazy, if that's what it is? So it's really going into that relationship as well and the culture of a team. Because it's easy to say, And I think that many people say now, if we read, you know, recruitment ads and things, that you should come in as you are and you should be yourself. But it takes a lot. That's why I think it's so interesting to work with leadership in the self-leadership context, because it takes leaders to create self-leadership.
I really love this this balance between allowing and receiving. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think I've reflected on, for example, so psychological safety is a huge term, for example, that a lot of people, I think, throw around maybe without necessarily yep. knowing exactly A, what it means, and B, what it takes
yeah.
mm-hmm. To actually create that environment. And what you're saying, Marlene, that it takes some sense of leadership to mm-hmm. build the space and frame it. What does that leader do? Maybe what are some like common threads or themes that you've seen throughout your work?
I think that one of the first things that you've seen is that leader is coming in with their whole selves. Like that openness and transparency is key, I think. If you ask that of others, then that's something that you need to do. And doing that is also having a certain awareness of who you are. You can be different as a leader, but being clear on your own values, your own strength, your own pitfalls, your own purpose or drive, I think is really important when you ask people to do that as well. And then I think the second thing is something that we often talk about, which is the genuine curiosity. Are you actually curious of the people that you are leading and meeting? Do you want to know who they are? Do you want to know what they want to contribute with? Mm. If you're not curious, if you're just trying to, you know, create a result or do your own career, I don't think that people will feel that they are welcomed into that.
You describe it really well. I also think that and that's, again, where I think self-leadership comes in. You will have a better platform for genuine curiosity if you have done some work with yourself and your self-leadership. So the more grounded you are, the more curious you can actually be towards others. Another thing is, because we talk about leadership, right? And you are a leader. You have taken on the role as a leader because there is something that should get done. There is a mission or a task that you gather a team of people that you're curious about because you think that these people can actually achieve that. We have something that we want to do together. And within that, I think showing up with your full self is also coming in with your capacity. So it would be a waste from a leadership perspective to have all these great people and not holding them accountable for what they want to come in with and contribute with. Because in an organizational setting, that's why we're there together. So that's also a huge thing for me, I think, that you dare to tell people that if you're not here, we're not going to succeed. And I will hold you accountable for that. And I believe that I can hold you accountable for that because I know that you are a responsible, a sensible human being that wants to contribute. No?
Mm. Yeah. I like what you're saying around that also, that I think, I feel like it sometimes gets lost when we talk about this like vulnerable space. Is yeah. that it also is actually being really, as you were also on to Marlon before, being very transparent about the mm. expectations. Mm. Mm. This is yeah. what we're trying to achieve. What does that look like for you to be part of that delivery? Yeah. And it's not, there are many conversations like that I think we're sometimes a little bit afraid of also.
Mm. I think that that's something, you know, coming into organizations and coming into groups, we also see when it's almost like it's, I don't want to say gone too far, but maybe in a way, yes, that it's where people use their own personal situations or feelings, and that becomes the focus, that we are, you know, a setting where we all can just share whatever we want, where you become sort of more like a family or a group of friends than an organization, and where everything is allowed, which doesn't really become healthy either. So I think that we do a lot of work and talk a lot about psychological safety, and we talk about the psychological safety, you could say, is, do we have the safety that we need to have all the conversations that we need to do a good job together? And that means sometimes being open about your personal life, because these people here need to know that I'm struggling right now in order for us to collaborate well. But it's also understanding what conversations we don't need to have. So yeah, it's finding that balance in talking about the things that we need to talk about in order for us to focus on what we are here to do.
Mm.
And that's all from getting to know each other, understanding our strengths and how we work and how we collaborate and maybe what our situations are. But that shouldn't take over.
We were asked some time ago to work with an organization and have a few seminars on the topic of psychological safety, because they want to support their people to come in with their full selves. And one of my main takeaways from those seminars were when we did some work on what is psychological safety and what is it not. And you could, you know, hear how people just, when we actually said that, okay, psychological safety does not mean that you can behave any crazy way you want and expect people to hold that for you, because you are still, you need to navigate yourself in the context that you're in. And that is the responsibility that you have. Sometimes when people talk to us and ask us to work with psychological safety to allow teams to work better together, it's because, oh, we don't have people speaking up. We need to create a situation where people can actually feel comfortable being more open with what doesn't work or what they need or whatever it could be. And that's sort of what most often come out. But then we have the other situation where organizations come to us and say that, okay, we need to talk about the psychological safety because people are hijacking the space. People are not acting in a professional way. And we need to work on that. I don't know what you think about that, Shani, because the idea of psychological safety, as you say, is so very much talked about now. And it comes with a lot of maybe misunderstandings as well.
I think just listening to you and what comes up for me is sometimes we forget our own ownership.
Mm.
In things. And for me, that's a little bit what self-leadership also is actually owning who you are and not projecting that onto somebody or throwing it in somebody's face, but using it in a setting of work, of course, figuring out how does what I am and who I am serve here.
Yeah.
Mm.
And sometimes it means coming in as you talk about and sharing, you know what, this was really hard for me. And because of this and this thing that's happened to me in my life or whatnot, sometimes you need to be really personal to help somebody else understand. I do think it's a bit forgotten. I think that's why I personally like the term of self-leadership, because it kind of implies you also have ownership in it. And it's not just and I guess just reflecting on what we talk about is also that all of these things, like they're woven together. It's kind of a weird catch-22 of and then everything starts with ourselves.
It does.
Can't start anywhere else.
And maybe that is exactly it. Maybe that awareness is what takes you out of the weird catch-22 loop and actually allows you to change things. You know, it's because if you take ownership, then sometimes you end up in situations where you need to make difficult decisions that are not easy, because neither psychological safety in a team or self-leadership, it doesn't come with the idea that everything's nice. That is maybe what it means to come in with your whole self, to allow all those not very nice things to also be there.
Yeah, I mean, they are there.
Yeah, you
got so I always find it very fascinating that, and I've seen it now also throughout my process, and I don't know how that process has been for you in like stepping into owning your own business. I've found that I'm constantly confronting myself with all of these ideas that have been indoctrinated into me around my productivity and my loyalty, or, you know, how much I am supposed to be doing at certain times, and constantly doing these maths of owing things in different places. And it takes an extraordinary amount of self-leadership and self-awareness to move through those moments, I think, actually, in a way that isn't too reactive. I don't know. I'm curious also what, because you've been on a journey as partners as well. Yeah. What does that look like for you?
That's a very good question. So as I said, we started quite some time ago working in another organization together. And I think that very briefly described, we realized that we started working more and more together and finding, you know, more and more projects to do together and clients to work with, because it worked really well, because we had the same idea. It showed of what a good human experience was, both in how we worked with the clients, how we wanted to partner with them to develop an initiative together that would be a good fit, but also what kind of human experience we wanted to create with the teams when we met them and when we worked with them on the floor or in the situations and workshops that we did. And then we are very different. So our self-leaderships, it is such a good example and a beautiful description of how two very different people can come in with different ideas of how things work and do something with it.
And there's probably beauty in the fact that you come in different ways.
There is, and also challenges, because one really interesting experience that we had, because when we started out, we had foundational ideas that were similar. Okay, we are not doing this to build a company, recruit, and earn a lot of money. That's not the main thing we're in this for. What we long for is a situation where we can do great stuff in partnership with clients, learn from that constantly, see where it takes us, and not necessarily work ourselves to death. But when we started out, it was in the middle of the pandemic, but it worked well. We had great clients. We did some really good things. We had a great first year. And then our first really big drawback happened. And that was so interesting from a perspective of how do you show up with your full self? Because we had worked for almost 4 months to set up an initiative with a Nordic organization. And it was all good. And we started doing the work and we were booked 9 months ahead. And then they pulled the plug and we didn't have anything else, you know? Mm-hmm. So we suddenly were in a situation as business partners where, oh shit, what do we do? Will we survive? Where will our projects come from? So what happened then? We reacted in totally different ways. What do you remember from that, Malin?
What do I remember from that? Well, I think that we first both acted pretty similar in just complete apathy, I think.
Boom.
We were running fast, doing a lot of things, and all of a sudden you wake up Monday morning and you're like, okay, we've got nothing to do. And I think that here our differences came, and I think that I held on to that longer. Sort of like, I don't know how we what we should do, whether Mia becomes very much more of a, I'm going to do things. Doesn't matter what I do, I'm going to do things. Because if I do things, I still feel like I'm productive. And here we are different, and we know this, and this can be a good thing when we get to work together. But at this point, it got really weird, and we had to find a way of working together, both in reflecting over and learning of what the experience and thinking long-term, what is it that we want, but also actually just go ahead and doing, get up on Monday morning and start doing things. And testing them out and seeing if they work. So it was finding a balance between our different maybe strengths and pitfalls.
But I think that one thing that also happened was that because there was like 2 weeks where I was running and, you know, damage control and we need to find short-term incomes and do all these things. And the more I did of that, the less you engaged because you were like, whoa, what's cooking? And, you know, we couldn't start aligning with each other again before we had had that conversations. And I think that is that kind of openness that happened there was kind of tough because I was disappointed. I thought it was hard that you didn't follow. And you were like, why are you running away from me? Why don't you interact with me and what we believe in before you start doing things? But what took the toll out of that and what made it possible for us to work towards something new was that we allowed ourselves to be curious, even though we were devastated and super sad. And that kind of curiosity is, again, what makes it work.
Yeah, I was just going to reflect that listening to you. Curiosity becomes such a tool in those moments of when you are able to lean back and listen to one another and put your ego to the side and go, okay, this is not about me. How are you? What are you feeling? Here I am. This is what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Another thing that popped into my mind as I was listening to you, and I think I've had a similar experience on my end, is that even when you know each other, you also have to go through the process. You can't skip it. I know I facilitated some team development a few years back, and we were basing it off of Susan Whelan's 4 steps, and the second step being kind of a bit of an uncomfortable step of conflict and like finding ways of coming together. And I remember this team saying, can we not skip it? I said, no.
Sorry.
You have to work it out, guys. Like, you can't skip the step. You can't skip the discomfort. Yeah. You have to find a way to move through it and build on it. So, yeah, just a lot of things that you were saying were kind of reminding me of that, that even when we know each other, even if we haven't experienced things together, those things can still awaken and challenge our ways of being self-leaders in those moments.
Yeah. Also, you know, we work with developing self-leadership in others, and we work in developing teams, and we still have to do the work. And, you know, for us, it's not a dramatic thing to share this. And I, for one, do not feel that this would be hazardous to share from a professional point of view, because what will people think of me if I share this? And how will this person be able to help us develop our self-leadership? Because I think that this is what makes it real, you know? You can have all the tools, you can have all the skills, you can have all the processes, but you're still a human being. You need to work through that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how aware you are.
Yeah.
So it's a continuous work as well.
Yeah,
I find a lot of these things, when you explore these concepts, most things are a practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a constant practice.
Yes.
And new situations will give us new opportunities to try it out. And sometimes it'll take us a bit longer to get to that point of, oh, okay, I know this. I know what to do here. And sometimes we'll need to have a moment of just observing and like being a little bit uncomfortable and not knowing what to do. And it's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, it's part of this allowing and receiving is also that gets to be shit some days and it's fine, right?
Yeah, it needs to be fine.
It needs to be fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is so interesting. And I'm wondering, you've worked with a lot of people over the years between the both of you and together. And we keep coming back to this, right? It starts with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And as much as, of course, you can look to construct environments in a corporate space, and you can look at how you design that with more intention, then none of it matters if the people coming into the space are not stepping up.
Yeah,
I know we touched a little bit on time and reflection, but just to kind of wrap up a little bit, what are some of the things that you would advise a person who's just starting out on this journey, who maybe doesn't have anybody driving this externally for them? Where do you start? What are some of the core things where you can kind of resort to, okay, I really want to evolve my self-awareness, self-leadership. Where can we start?
So the first thing I think would be think about what you long for yourself and for your situation. What is it that you want to see? That's the first one, because there is so much energy in that. And you can tap into so much curiosity in that. So that would be the first thing. And you can use that for yourself or for your team or for the organization that you're in. And connecting to that, tap into your resistance. When you instinctively want to shy away from a person or from a task or from something, what's that? That is so useful to think about. Whether it is, you know, the administration of doing your receipts or having that tough conversation with a colleague or whatever it is, or taking on the tougher job.
So what do you long for?
And tap into your resistance.
Tap into your resistance. I would add, where do you come from? I think that self-awareness builds from understanding, you know, everything that's been, understanding yourself through your own history, because that will help you to choose what you want to take with you and what do you want to not take with you. I think that's part of being grounded. And then I would add finding those mirrors. I don't think that this is a journey that you will do on your own. If you have a longing, there are millions of ways, I think, to find that. But who can you talk to? Who wants to do it with you? Or who wants to be your mirror? Because it's not a one-man job or a one-woman job to sit on your own, thinking out all of these things. We need to do that in dialogue with others.
Yeah, as I was listening to you also, I think as much as this is true for an individual, if you translate it ever so slightly, it's also true on a much bigger scale in terms of an organization.
Oh, yes.
If you want an organization to have a greater sense of direction and more of an engine towards that, it is really, I mean, what are you longing for is maybe not that question, but what are you striving for?
Yeah.
What is it that you want to see? What impact is it that you want to have? All these things that we answer in our strategy and in our mission statements.
Yeah.
And the resistance is really what's stopping us, what's blocking us.
Yeah.
And what does those things look like? And where we're coming from can, of course, be, you know, what are the things that we want to preserve?
Yeah.
Or can also be, or just understanding why is this not or let go of, or understanding why are things not working out for us. So a lot of the times I find that there are these correlations between self and organizational development, and it's because organizations are people. It's just a lot of them. A lot of things become true on both ends if you just tweak it a little bit.
That's a good way of describing what we are trying to do. I mean, an organizational level or a team level. as well.
I'm actually, I would love to throw in another question because I also became really curious.
Shoot.
We didn't talk so much about surrounding structures. We talked more about the team, the leader.
Yeah.
But I'm really curious, so I have to ask, because in honor of curiosity, when you see organizations that succeed in this, what are they doing to support the teams, the leaders, individuals? What do they do?
I think that one thing those organizations do is simplifying. They make it easy to focus on the learning instead of, you know, measuring. They simplify for leaders to talk to their people, whether it be the annual performance review or if it's the ongoing conversations during the workday. They simplify for the people to have those conversations in a good way and learn from that between leader and employee and within the team.
I would absolutely agree with that. It's simplifying and it's aligning. I think it's, if we say that we want to achieve something or do something, we go all the way in doing that. If we say that we want to create a learning culture where people learn and develop, it's aligned from the top down what is prioritized. And that if we say that we want people to be able to focus on their jobs, we make sure that there are not meetings 35 hours a week. I don't know. It's that alignment between what we say and what we do, I think.
Yeah, I share that observation. It's something I constantly come back to is, as people were really sensitive to the dissonance between the stories we tell and the stories we act out. And when the gap is too big, then the confidence is kind of lost in an organization. I like these two, alignment and simplification, because it also implies focus. And the help for us to direct our energy in a more purposeful way.
And, you know, because you posed the question, you wake the activist in me.
Yes.
And I have to say that there is something in an organization with more than 100 people, you lose connection. And I believe the reason for that is that if you're a top leader, if there are more people in the organization than that, you cannot be accountable for all of them, to all of them. So if you think about the village square, you need to be able to stand in the middle of the village square and meet everyone and talk to them and get their input. And the larger an organization is, the tougher that is. Of course, you can simplify and make it easier. But something happens with the alignment when a top leader will never be held accountable by the people that's actually doing the job and the other way around.
So what's important in those moments when you, because I mean, a lot of organizations are bigger than that.
I think understanding when it is helpful to be a larger entity and when it's not. It might be okay to be, you know, a big organization, but still functioning in a differentiated way.
Where did I hear that? I cannot remember the name of the researcher now, but he researched tribal structures.
Yeah.
And he said, I think it is around 100 or 150 is exactly as you say, is the number when we start losing connection and it's not graspable for us anymore. How can we construct our organization around those sizes of units instead to like maintain connection?
And then you have Yeah, systems within systems. And then you have, you know, great ways to create that connectivity with the storytelling and with presence and making sure people get to share experiences and all of those things that are super interesting and actually work to a certain degree. But it does not work if you are not aware of it, if you do not pay attention to it from that perspective, that this is something that we need to create and support.
And I guess this is also another angle in for self-leadership, because we quite quickly kind of surpass the size of something that is graspable for us and manageable. And then you really need to have a sense of trust that there is ownership throughout the organization and awareness throughout the organization, even if you're not touching it physically. Then self-leadership, I'm sure, is something that elevates the capability of the organization, irrespective of whether the leader is accessible from the top or not.
Yes.
So that kind of loops us back to the beginning where we're talking about efficiency and efficient organizations and size and connectivity, and kind of nicely comes back to then, efficient organizations. Any last words on efficient organizations and self-leadership?
I think that what we've talked about throughout this is when we allow people to come in with their full selves and when we create that environment that also receives people in that way, we take out so much of the energy and the focus that goes to managing that, managing your own appearance, managing the political game, managing your own career, or, you know, covering for yourself. And you, when you do that, when you know what your task is and you know that you're welcomed into that, and that you get to use what you're best at, it takes out so much that we become efficient. Because we can focus on the job at hand. You don't have to focus on anything else. I know that Robert Keegan, we work with his research and theories a lot, talk about that second job. Mm. We have a second job of managing ourselves and our appearance and our performance. And when we take that out, we can put the energy into doing what we're here to do. And I think that would create a lot of efficiency for many of us.
Yes.
If we succeed.
If we succeed, it's a constant practice to succeed in this. Wow. Yes. So thank you for this. I think that was an excellent way to wrap it up. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
thank
I hope to continue having more conversations.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Thank you for listening to The Experienced Designers. As always, I hope this episode brought you some new insight, or at least a moment of reflection. A special thank you to Marlin and Mia for their openness, philosophizing, and sharing of knowledge. Don't forget to click subscribe, and as always, get in touch if you have any questions or suggestions. That's how we make better experiences.